We're being forced into a subscription-based economy, folks. And that part of that subscription is going to be housing. And it's going to be the next generations that are going to be really, really subject to that. So I am hell-bent on trying to help my family and then the families of those we work with to continue to build your portfolio for the sake of those future generations. Otherwise, it's being taken from them.
Welcome to the Get Real Podcast, your high-octane boost of full-on reality therapy for personal, business, and investing success with your host, Ron Phillips, because somebody's got to tell it like it is.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Get Real Podcast. Ron Phillips here. Heather Marchant is not with us today, but she'll be back next time. Man, I've got an exciting show today. Like, I don't know that I've actually ever done this on the podcast. So because of that, I hope you will stick around. We're going to talk about loans and interest rates and things like that. We're going to talk about specific properties today, which I've never done. And I think it was about a week ago, might have been 2 weeks ago, one of you, who will remain nameless, was talking to me and they were saying, you know, Ron, I listen to the show. I hear the show all the time. I like what you guys say. And I haven't invested in real estate yet. So I am talking to you, all of you. If you've been listening, if you like what you hear, if real estate sounds like what you should be doing, it's time to do it. It's actually time. Right? It's actually past time to be doing it. So we're going to discuss a little bit of some current inventory that we have, which has some really cool lending, I don't know if trick's the right word. Anyway, I brought a really good friend on to help me handle this today, so to speak. Aaron Chapman, welcome to the show. Aaron is I'm trying to remember when it is we actually first met. I've known Aaron for a long time, years. We'll just say years. I've known Aaron for years.
We've crossed paths a lot, long time ago. And then I think the real first just direct meeting was 2016, where we had to just sit there, engage and converse.
Yep. So anyway, it's been a long time. Aaron is a professional in the lending industry, but specifically what matters to you is he's a professional in the investment property lending world, which is a completely different world. Any of you who've been through the process know this is not your average loan. It's a little bit more complicated. The cool thing about Aaron, other than that he's been doing this since like 1997, since before many of you were born, it's that he's also an investor. He understands us. He understands the numbers really, really well. And because of that, he's a really good advocate, I think is the right word, and guide. So I wanted to talk to him specifically today because we've got some really cool things that we're doing. I don't think I've ever actually talked about what we've got on these particular properties before, Aaron. But it's a really, really cool thing that isn't used very much because I don't think very many people know about it to begin with. And I think the people who have heard of it, usually there's massive companies that are doing this because it takes so much money to actually go play in this world. And that thing is called a forward. So will you-
A forward or a bulk lock, it really is what it would be. And the thing is, what you're saying is not played with a lot in the market when you're not a massive company. The other aspect of it is it's a very, very difficult thing to manage from a lending perspective. And a lot of people maybe won't not see that, maybe think it's easier. It's actually much harder for us as a lender to do this than it is to just take one deal at a time as it comes in, lock an interest rate, close a loan. Much simpler. But yeah, what you're talking about here and just the description of the forward. And one of the things I do appreciate you said is an advocate, me as an advocate for the real estate investor, even though I'm in the lending space, what the real estate investors don't know or what there's no way you could know is what the landscape was like for a lender trying to do loans exclusively for real estate investors after the crash of 2008. Because the perception of the real estate investor was very, very ugly in the banking world. Because everybody was getting these zero down, no income loans and buying properties like crazy and expanding their portfolio, but not putting renters in them because you could turn on the sell the house for $50,000 more in a month back in 2005, 6, 7. There was this crazy
worse, they'd refinance it on another negative amortization loan or something ridiculous like that, pull the money out and use it to go buy more. I mean, it was psychotic.
It was like trading options is what they were doing, but they were using it with finance. And it was really wild to watch, but I didn't know any different. I got into the business in 1997, like you said, and then I was being introduced to it right when the subprime type of loan was coming out and becoming prevalent. So I just thought that that was loans. So I just played along doing stuff. And then they got really big into pushing us to do that pay option arm because there's huge money. What was interesting was the massive money that was being paid by what we call a secondary market, meaning Wall Street was buying into these big pools and demanding this because they were getting such massive returns because it was all interest they were collecting, right? So the pay option loans and then the HELOCs, credit lines, They were giving us 10 points on a credit line. Think about that. That's insane. You give somebody a $100,000 credit line, they were paying us as an organization $10,000 to write that deal.
It's nuts. So that whole time in history was crazy. Absolutely. Nuts,
right? Credit access was insane. So then we had the crash. We get past that. Well, then going through the process of advocating for the real estate investor was hard, very hard. I got audited like you wouldn't believe by Fannie and Freddie and everybody. And I was being stifled by the companies I was working for, saying, no, we want you to do this and this. I was like, no, I like the real estate investor. So I continued to push and push and push. And so now I'm in that top 20 people in the United States for transactions closed, and I only focus on the real estate investor. So thank you for that. What we have right now is a really, really exciting thing where I will scream long and loud, interest rates don't matter. As long as you're in a single digit, you should be buying investment real estate. Last year, 44% of the housing was the single families were sold to the hedge funds. It is anticipated that by 2030, the hedge funds will own control 60% of the available single family housing. There's a value there that somebody sees and they're trying to take it from you. So when people say it's now a good time to invest in real estate, it's like, you better, because if you don't, you won't have a shot at it. Your kids won't have a shot. Your grandkids definitely won't have a shot. And your great grandkids, they don't even know who you are. So that being the situation, we have something very, very exciting, right? But it's for a commitment. And what that does for you is you have a construction company that builds houses, a home builder, and they're setting these things up. And they have a property management company and they're managing the homes for you. And they're working with Ron to get these out to you. But instead of doing the big, massive marketing campaigns do and all these expenses they do to try and sell these homes, they're applying that money to buying it down an interest rate for you. So when we do it on a lock of multiple houses at once, we negotiate with Wall Street through our sources. Because of the volume I do, I can negotiate better pricing, especially in bulk pricing like that. I'm doing this in a way that I can acquire rates in the fives and give you, the investor, that interest rate with 0 points in the collaboration with this particular source of funds.
I want everybody to understand, interest rates right now, just so we're clear, because I don't know when you're going to listen to this, but interest rates right now at 0 points are where? 7.5?
0 points for a real estate investor. Well, let's just put it this way. 0 points for a person buying a house to live in is, I'll just pull it up right now on Bankrate. Let's just go there so people can see it.
Yeah, because I want to put this into perspective. And I agree with what Aaron said about interest rates. Interest rates don't matter that much. The deal matters and buying, because over time, real estate kicks the pants off of everything. That said, when you have the option of getting 5.5 versus Q Aaron with rate,
7.1% for your average home buyer living in the house.
Okay.
7.1% with 0 points.
Investor loan is going to be probably a point higher than that.
Right? Exactly. You're pushing in 8%.
Okay. So we're a full 2.5 points lower than a normal no money 0 point loan. So I just want to put that in perspective. That's a massive amount. And in payment, it's hundreds of dollars. And that hundreds of dollars is your cash flow. And I realize also, look, cash flow is a rule, right? You want to have positive cash flow. Cash flow isn't the thing that makes you wealthy. It's what takes care of the property, makes sure the property pays for itself over time. It'll put a little bit of money in your pocket. If you have a lot of units, that changes your life. If you have a few units, it doesn't really affect your life, but the appreciation, the principal reduction, the tax benefits, and the cash flow rolled together, that alters lives. All right. And I agree with Aaron. Like, I just heard Barbara Corcoran the other day said something that I've been saying for months now. The prices are not going down right now. They're not going down. As a matter of fact, in Charleston, where I live, which I know is a unique market, but prices are going up still. They are going to continue to go up. We have a severe supply and demand problem. And listen, inflation that they said was going down is actually on the uptrend now. I mean, all of this plays to higher prices, higher interest rates. And what we're talking about is locking in an interest rate for 30 years, which is, I don't know, it's basically shorting the dollar against the banks.
And even at the rates today at 7%+, is shorting the dollar against the banks. I want to share something with you, Ron, and with everybody here. So those who can't see this, what I'm going to show you is I'm going to show you a chart. It's a market chart that goes all the way back to 2008. Now, if you've seen The Big Short, you understand what drives mortgages and what drives rates. It's the mortgage-backed security. It's not the 10-year. It's not what the federal fund rate is. It's none of those things. Now, those things have an influence because that's going to influence investors to put their money one place or another. There's hundreds of different places they can put their money. But if they put their money in equities, they're going into, of course, the stocks. So they're going into bonds. They're going to choose which bond. Would it be the 10-year, which is a bond? It's a 10-year bond. You're giving money to the government. They're saying I'm going to pay you back a flat rate of return for 10 years. years, and here's your, it used to be a certificate. You get this bond. Well, you have an option to go into a bond, which is a 30-year bond. You throw the money into this big pool, and they're going to lend it out to people for their houses. Your money is now secured by real estate and the promise to repay by the person who you gave the bond to. And then the guarantee from the banking entity or Fannie, Freddie, wherever that is, says, we will pay you back. So what I'm showing here is the Fannie Mae or the Universal Mortgage Backed Security that goes out to the GSEs, the government sponsored entities. And it shows you the history of this all the way back to 2008. And pay close attention, Ron, to this yellow line that I have drawn right here.
Now, what I've been asked is what?
That yellow line represents the price point referenced the day they announced quantitative easing. Now, what I'm showing you here is each one of these sticks, what we call a Japanese candlestick, represents a week's worth of trading. You traded upward or downward. And you'll see the green ones reference if the start point of that week and the end point of that week. If it's green, it was up. If it starts at a high point and goes down, meaning people traded out of it, then your candlestick was red, meaning it was a negative week.
The higher this graph grows, what does that mean? And the lower the graph goes.
The more money flowed into this, the higher it went. So the higher this goes, more money available, interest rates go down. So okay, the higher this goes,
is an inverse graph. So exactly. I want to paint a picture for you right now. This is a slow moving arch that goes up over many years with a pretty significant, like if it was a roller coaster, it would be like the teaser hill before the big hill.
Right.
And at the end of this graph, which is more current, that's the real hill, not the teaser hill. This is the real hill where it goes way down. And as it goes down, what Aaron is saying is interest rates are going up. And you guys can feel this because you knew this happened last year. You felt it. And it kind of felt like that kind of a hill on a roller coaster. I mean, it's kind of what it felt like. Right.
It was a steep, steep, steep drop is what that was. So you go back to 2008, we had the crash. Nobody was wanting to put money into these pools because they're like, the real estate's not worth anything. We don't want to put our money at risk there. They were lending it out indiscriminately. Well, then you get Ben Bernanke and Hank Paulson get together. Ben Bernanke was the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Hank Paulson was the secretary of the Treasury. They said, let's do quantitative easing. That means we're going to take money printed from the U.S. Treasury, hand it to the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is going to invest into corporate bonds, into U.S. treasuries, and into mortgage-backed securities. So they dumped. They started putting in money. And they did $1.25 trillion from January 1, 2009 to the end of March 2010. That was their biggest injection of capital right out of the gate. Now, they announced it, though. The announcement of this was November 23rd, 2008. That's when they announced it, said, we're going to do this. The market jumped in. So it's kind of hard for you to see it, Ron. But right here, where I drew that line. I started the line right here at November 23rd. So that established what was the market's value before that. So before that, it was below that value. Then they announced, we're going to do quantitative easing. And you see this immediate jump up. Massive jump up. This represents a lot of money, hundreds of billions of dollars flowing into the market at that window because the Fed said, we're going to invest here. So if you heard about a stock, somebody said, guess what? They told you over drinks one time to say, hey, Ron, we're going to dump about $100 million into a startup stock next week. Are you going to jump in that stock? Or are you going to wait?
Yeah. Well, Reddit does that all the time, apparently.
Exactly. And, yeah. So people do that. You see what happens. So now we get to this orange line that I've drawn here. That's the day that they actually started putting money into the mortgage-backed securities by the Fed started doing it. And some people pulled some money out and took some profits. But then you see everything has stayed up that entire time. Why? Because the
and
Fed
I mean way up,
it.
Guys. Like this chart goes way up. It's a gradual climb, but it's very, very significant. Which
and
is
so
when we have low
is,
interest rates, remember, because it's an inverse, right? So
it's an inverse. Yeah, this shows an enormous amount of capital. And this whole thing represents $8.9 trillion. But what you have here is when the Fed decided, hey, we're going to start tapering back. And that was where you saw this dip. It was the teaser hill. That teaser hill was back at the end of 2017 when the Fed said, we're going to start backing off a bit. They were calling that a taper tantrum because the market freaked out a little bit. Well, they decided to go right back into 2018, pushed it all the way up till October 2021 when the Fed says, yes, we're going to do quantitative easing. We're not going to reinvest any of the returns that come in because when you make payments, there's a return coming in. They're just reinvesting it, rolling it in, rolling it in. They stopped doing that. What happened? You brought that up earlier in your description, the big, big, big hill, the massive drop. So that massive drop shows the Fed pulling out. Everybody else start pulling out. And where did we end up going? Went below that line. We tried to keep above it. I'm going to zoom in here a little bit more so we can talk about this a little more here. So you get to that drop. And this is the point where people start talking about, so what are rates going to do? Are they going to come back up? Where are the rates going to go down? Because everybody keeps talking about the rates going to go back down.
When was this?
This was in 2023. This is early 2023. So we battled through the end of 21 and all of 22 is just a bloodbath. Then you get to the opening of 2023, it starts to come up a bit and everybody's like, okay, maybe this is where it's going to stop and we're going to get better interest rates. And I went back and started looking early 2023. It's like, I don't think so. And that's where I discovered that yellow line, that price point of 100.54, which I said, but wait a minute, what was the reason we even had interest rates go down? It's because quantitative easing. Well, what was the day they announced quantitative easing? So that's the day I drew that line. And I was publicly out on my YouTube channel saying, I think this is going to be our point. This is going to be where the market does not put more capital in. We're going to be at this point where interest rates will not get lower than where they will be at this point. So they danced on this till it kindly, and then it started just going down. More references to, hey, greater jobs, we as an administration doing great things for the economy. So I kept thinking the economy is still doing really, really good. So that's why people are coming out of the bonds going into equities. And then you get into October of last year, we start getting real jobs reports. Do you remember when we were seeing back in 2023 that they were getting these jobs report that they're anticipating 70,000 new jobs, we're getting 300,000? And what is this all about? They dig into the BLS report and you start finding this weird algorithm is being used. They're saying, well, we have an influx of X amount of people coming into the United States because so many people are coming into the United States. We'd anticipate X amount of percentage those would actually need jobs. And so we're just going to factor in as potential job growth. And they're making up the number. Well, then in October, they couldn't keep making up the number and we got real numbers on what's happening in the economy. It shot up, showing that we had weakness in the economy, which is good for bonds. Bonds shot up, but where did it stop? It stopped at that same line that I referenced back a year and a half before. It bounced off it, bounced off it, bounced off it, and it's receding from there. We are at a point where people say, are rates going to go down? No, because unless the Fed injects hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars into the market itself cannot stomach going above this point.
Which, guys, you have to understand, and I've said this on the podcast before, they can't do that anymore. And remember, they've been trying to get inflation under control. And the dirty little secret is that it's not under control. Producer price index is up. It's up like 1.6% for this year. And if that's a precursor, that's what producers pay for the goods, for the raw material that goes to build the products, right? So the producer price index is an indicator of what's to come in the CPI or the consumer price index because the prices are going up. In addition to that, the government tells you that the inflation rate is 3.2%. It's not, and you know it isn't because you feel it every single place you go. It has not come back all the way down like that. There's plenty of websites online that will show you what used to be calculated in the inflation rate. And if you use all of those, we're still north of 10. So look, they can't keep injecting money. They're trying to pull the money back. And every time they try to pull the money back, things go not so hot for them, right? And this is going to continue to happen. And if you take this further down the road with new construction, I think our deficit right now is at least 1 million units, which we haven't built. And the banks are now not loaning to the same degree that they were to builders. Builders have pulled back on inventory that we desperately need. And the demand hasn't gone anywhere in spite of the rates. So, I mean, Aaron just told you what happened with the rates. In spite of the rates, we still see in many areas across the country where people are overbidding on houses just to get them because there's not enough inventory because people are not moving out of the house that they have a 3% interest rate loan lock. I don't think that's going to get better. I really don't.
I'm 100% with you. I don't see that improving. We have this influx of people coming to the United States, legal, illegal. They're still here. Right. So there's going to be that demand. The hedge funds are picking it up. We're being forced into a subscription-based economy, folks. If you don't believe that, you're not looking. And that part of that subscription is going to be housing. And it's going to be the next generations that are going to be really, really subject to that. So I am hell-bent on trying to help my family and then the families of those we work with to continue to build your portfolio for the sake of those future generations. Otherwise, it's being taken from them. Now, let's talk about inflation just a little bit deeper moment here with respect to how to really look at this. Because inflation is not things becoming more expensive. If you go back to the 1920s and before, and I didn't get my coin out, I should have had it with me. They minted a $20 gold piece, which was you could walk into a department store and get a hat, a suit, a tie, a shirt, a belt, a pair of socks, and a pair of shoes with that $20 gold piece. Ron, can you walk into a department store right now and buy a pair of socks for $20?
Well, depends on the socks. Probably not any sock I would want.
Yes, exactly. It's not going to last real long. So the point here is, you could still walk into a department store, get everything I just described to you with an ounce of gold, because the gold is worth a certain amount and those materials are worth a certain amount, but the value of the instrument we're exchanging for it has declined significantly. So that has not changed. It's just gold is not $20 anymore. It's $2,500, right? Another illustration, 1993. I could walk into a Taco Bell. Don't do that now. They had a value menu, two bean burritos, two tacos, and a drink for $1.99. $2, you're feeding yourself. As an 18-year-old kid, that was easy to stomach, right? I was taking my daughter. We were driving by a Taco Bell. I had to drop her off at school. She goes, hey, Dad, let's swing in there. It was an after-school thing. I want to get some tacos. So I pulled through. That's not on the menu anymore, but she ordered those exact things, two bean burritos, two tacos, and a drink. What do you think I paid for that?
Oh, it had to be north of 10.
You paid $15.
Yeah.
So again, illustrates inflation. So the reason I bring that up is, guys, we can go into the amortization of things. If you do a quick back of the napkin thing, I'm going to give you guys a quick formula. Do this for you on your own. You can pause this. But take whatever purchase price, $200,000, 20% down. We're talking about $160,000 loan. And if you did the right job, which is working with Ron and his team to find the right property that stays reasonably rented the entire time you own it, the tenant pays the rent, pays the payment off for you. Are they going to pay off the mortgage? Well, you take that mortgage, $160,000, divide by 30, which is the years it's going to take them to pay it off for you. I know there's an amortization table. I'm making it simple for you. You're going to find that's $5,333.34 per year. That means your investment of capital, which is $40,000 down, and let's say you paid an enormous amount of fees. Let's just throw it up to 10 grand. That's $50,000 you invested. 20% down, $40,000, $10,000 in total costs, an enormous amount of costs, much higher than you should, but we're being aggressive here. That's 50 grand invested. But if your tenant's paying off that mortgage, you're increasing your investment of 50 grand by 10.6% every year just with them paying off the mortgage. Or you're not getting that somewhere else.
One return.
That's only one piece, return. Right? Now we're talking about inflation is pushing the price of housing up, right? You bought the house today, a $200,000 house. And we saw last year, Case-Shiller, Black Knight, everybody's saying we're about 6.9% annually across the United States in home appreciation or price appreciation. Let's just say you're 2.5%. It is very simple. Ronnie, you can tell me whether or not I'm full of crap. 2.5% is an easy thing to achieve in damn near any market that we are having investors go buy houses, right?
That's correct.
It's almost impossible not to get 2.5%. That means your $200,000 house just increased by $5,000 that year and will continue to compound. It'll be a compound 2.5%. That means your $50,000 just grew by another 10%. A 20.6% increase just by those two aspects of the loan, of the transaction.
And we figured that on the $200,000, right? Not on the $40,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that 10% levered, you have to multiply, right? So that's actually north of a 30% return on the one. People get lost on the levered return, which is why Aaron's trying to keep this super simple. But understand that when you figure appreciation on the total amount, you have a multiplicative effect of that, right? So anyway.
So massive compound effect. But where the section this really comes in is when it comes to paying the mortgage. On this $200,000 house, you're going to pay north of $420,000 in principal and interest on this house at current interest rates. But we just talked about the value of the dollar and how it erodes with inflation. The lender doesn't get to raise the payment on that loan. You get to raise the rents, but they don't get to raise the payment. And every time you recalculate the payment on that mortgage, you actually pay less than what you borrowed. So never pay it off early. Never follow the debt snowball BS. Reinvest. Keep growing your capital. Make the bank wait for their money, and they will get less and less and less from you as you're raising rents, getting an amortization on that loan by somebody else, and getting the appreciation. If you ever want to understand this calculation, just reach out to me. Call me. I actually have an app that I'll give you that gives you the ability to calculate this. It's my app. I had it created.
Yeah, and it's really cool. The inflation adjusted piece of it is sick.
It's covered, isn't it?
And this hurts people's brains too, but you're literally paying off the loan with money that is worth less every single year. You're in essence, if you fix your rate, whatever that rate is, and we're talking about a ridiculously low rate right now on these particular properties, but whatever that is, if it's fixed, you've locked it in, the bank can't do anything about it. But if Aaron and I are wrong and rates go drop down to 3, you can refinance and lock it in again for 30 years. The bank can't do that to you though. And so if you get this 5.5% interest rate, that thing's locked forever. And like Aaron said, every single year when you raise your rents, your return goes up. And incidentally, Aaron did really, really simple math to keep this super easy. But the amortization schedule is in your favor the longer you pay the loan. So the longer you pay the loan, the more principal is being reduced, right? So every year your return goes up with your rent, your return goes up with your amortization schedule, and with your appreciation. The numbers It's just a math problem. The numbers don't lie. The returns are really, really good.
Unbelievable is what they are. And then you also get the tax deduction of the interest that you didn't even pay. Your tenant paid. We need to get into that kind of aspect of it. And then, of course, the depreciation on the structure. There's so many ways that you're making money on this. The reason I get into this, and I can get into deeper math. There's more that we can talk about. But people get very, very tunnel vision on cash return. They get very tunnel vision on cap rates. And those are great metrics. But in my opinion, they're vanity metrics. The reason that became such a big deal for the last 13 years, because it's the easiest sell. If you could put this big, bold number at the bottom, though, it's 13% cash on cash return, you'd be stupid not to do the deal, right? But it was no different than, Ron, you walking into a dealership and saying, I want a red car. That's the only thing you gave them was the stipulation of a red car. They're going to bring you the most expensive damn red car they can find because that's all you wanted. That's what was the cash on cash return metric was being used for the last 13 years with most of the people selling real estate. Now we got to dig under the hood a little bit more, explain the depth of where your value is. And your value is finding something you keep reasonably rented your entire time you own it, and you can raise rents and it'll appreciate at least 2.5%. If you can do those things, you're making 30, 40, 50% return on your investment just by getting the deal. The difference is you're not seeing it just into your bank account. You have to understand the depth of this investment. You have to understand how not paying off the lender is benefiting you. You also have to understand what Warren Buffett himself said, the 30-year fix is the greatest financial instrument in history because it's a one-way bet. If you're wrong, you just refi. But if you're right, you protect yourself from increasing interest rates, which is where we're heading, and you're not locked yourself into something that they're going to come back and nail you with. That's why those short-term deals like the ARMs and the 2 years, and there's some people out there touting 100% financing with a 2-year ARM. Like, yeah, I can't really believe you're even talking about this.
Really bad. It's like 2008 never happened. And if you want to understand just how bad the financial institutions have it when the levers move on a fixed rate, just look at what's happened with the assets in the commercial world they've gotten stuck with. All these banks that had problems, it was like a year ago. It was because they had to market the assets, but the people who had the loans didn't. So anyway, we could go more complicated, but that's plenty enough to understand. Look, you're able to get an interest rate. It's on these specific properties. And I want to make sure everybody understands, like, this isn't something you can just go. So don't call another lender and say, this guy, Aaron, I heard, he said you can get 5.5% interest rate. You can't get that on anything other than this particular builder's properties.
It's builder with us as a lender. That's the way it's already been.
That's correct. And it's because of where the money came from and that the builder basically paid for this money at a reduced rate, right? So all of that's kind of tied in together. So A, don't call anybody else. B, when you reach out to us, you can reach out to us at invest@rpcinvest.com. When you reach out to us, same thing. There's a stock of inventory and your cash on cash return that Aaron was talking about is going to be pretty comparable to what you could get in a money market. I mean, it's not out of control great, but it's good. It's solid. It's a brand new property and they're under rented. And the reason that they are is because the builder wants them full. And the reason he wants them full is one other thing that we haven't talked about is when you buy a property that's leased on a loan, you have 30 to 45 days with no payment, which means you get all of the rent. Right. Instead of having to make that mortgage payment. So if your mortgage payment is $1,200, let's say, that's another $100 a month cash flow that you got for the year that most people don't even think about on a pre-leased property. So he makes sure all these things are pre-leased, purposefully puts them under market. And then most people on the next year, they get to have that increase on year two and then subsequent years as the rents go up. Right. Which I believe they're going to continue to do. So, Aaron, any parting words on this? I encourage everybody to reach out, invest@rpcinvest.com, and just let us know you're interested in this, and we'll have somebody reach out to you. If you're already working with somebody on the team, just reach out to them. This is a limited opportunity on specific properties. Working with Aaron and his team are fantastic people. And
we appreciate that. We never, ever, ever take the trust lightly, or we'll go to our grave fighting to continue to keep earning the trust from everybody. And I appreciate the kind words and, of course, the introduction to everybody here. The data that we went over is very, very brief, very, very quick. We can get deep, deep, deep into the data. I can sit here and mind bend you for hours if you would like, because it does get deep. And I want you to be confident as a real estate investor coming into this. There's this old saying, good judgment comes from experience and experience comes from bad judgment. Great way to learn on the grade school playground, but a very, very bad way to learn in investment real estate. I have been doing this for a very long time with a lot of people, thousands of transactions. I've seen where a lot of people have made decisions in their business where they failed and where they succeeded. Things that you think sound really great on paper, don't step into it until you talk to somebody who has actually seen the practical application. That's where we open ourselves up. Just go to my website, aaronchapman.com. If you want the app, hell, you can just text me, 602 602- 291-3357. I'm giving you my personal cell phone. Just text me, say, I heard you talking with Ron. I would love to see your app. I will make sure that the instructions get to you on how to download it. It's on the App Store, and then how to use it. Because I want you to feel confident when you're looking at these houses with Ron and his team, and you're looking at the analysis of it. It's like, I'm not sure. I want you to know what you're looking for and what you want and why you go in and do that, while somebody else who's not understanding this might pass by something that's an amazing opportunity. These folks out there aren't bidding your houses up on you because they don't get it. When you understand who you're working with here between my team and this team, Ron's group, you will be more empowered than the average individual out there. And we will definitely help you begin to build that wealth and that long-term growth you're anticipating. And you will be hopefully that one who changes things for your family. The John D. Rockefeller. Before Rockefeller, the name didn't mean anything. After John D., it meant something. We want to ensure that you have the opportunity to be that person that changes that meaning in your family's name.
Aaron, really appreciate your time. Folks, if you're interested in this cool little program that we've got, 5.5% interest rate, reach out. It's invest@rpcinvest.com. As always, the best thing that you can do for us, for this show, if you like it, is to go and review it and then share it with everybody. Don't keep us a secret, folks. And until next time, get out there and make something happen.
This has been the Get Real Podcast. To subscribe and for more information, including a list of all episodes, go to GetRealEstateSuccess.com.